everybody. Welcome to the Wrestling Through the Years podcast. I'm your humble, gracious, and beautiful host, Dan, and I'm here with my big brother, Dougie.
Yo, what's up, everybody?
And we're also here with our main man, Eric.
What's up?
How you doing? And the grand return. We got Survivor Series 2023 vibes going on here with CM Punk and everything. A return of that magnitude. Clinith is back on the show. Clinith, how the hell are you doing?
I'm good. It's good to be back.
And it's great to have you back.
Comparing him, I mean, I would say, you know, two big returns that night, CM Punk, Randy Orton. I mean, I would at least say that, well, actually, technically three returns, but Clinith's return is definitely bigger than R-Truth's.
Well, I mean, any of those compare. I mean, I'd be compared to R-Truth, Randy, or Punk and be happy.
Yeah. No, it's good to have Clinith. It's good to have Clinith back. It's been a while. We're just happy that you were actually off today and didn't sleep through the show. Like your return you were supposed to have a couple weeks ago.
Hey,
sorry. I'm sorry. Okay, you try working 11 days straight, and then when you finally get home, and you just fall asleep, okay? Your body can't take you much more.
My body can't even take 3 days in a row.
It was literally like that Tuesday all the way up to the following next Friday after WrestleMania. So that Tuesday, WrestleMania weekend until the following next Friday, every day.
Wow.
Jesus,
man.
It's such a
hard worker,
man.
There you go,
Paul. All right. Which I have to, the rest of me was awesome being there live.
Yeah, but at least you and Eric both got that. And good for you. That's all. I mean, you witnessed probably, in my eyes, one of the best WrestleManias in the past 20 years and probably my favorite WrestleMania main event, selfishly, but one of the best, at least top five best WrestleMania main events of all time for night two, I would say.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not just saying that.
But here's the kicker, though. I was there during the fight scene in the crowd. That was my section they were fighting in.
Dude.
That was my section. I actually snuck past security right before Cody threw him over the wreck. Snuck past and made it look like I was looking for my floor seat. You know, one of my friends caught me in a crowd, actually.
You should have tried to sneak yourself on camera. Hi, guys.
I was looking for him and Eric the whole time.
Oh, yeah, so was I.
But, no, that's sick. That's sick. But yeah, what a great WrestleMania was. And now we're going to start the show talking a little current. And now we're in a wonderful place post-WrestleMania. We're going into a backlash tomorrow. AEW is kind of hot with a hot angle right now. Of course, the show topic is top 10 wrestling things that we think should have worked that didn't work. We're going to be doing our 4-1.
Yeah. Now, Clintus, I got another question for you. You went to TakeOver, right?
Yes, I did.
How was that?
TakeOver was good. Let's put it this way. I felt like, in a way, because they kind of rushed it at the end. The Roxanne Perez match, fire. But the Carmelo Trick Williams match, which was real good on hype, I think they kind of rushed it because they know they were running, cutting it close to the pre-show of WrestleMania.
Yeah, and that kind of sucks because, like, that was, like, one of the most hyped matches of the weekend.
Yeah. So for my first TakeOver, it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
NXT's been hot lately.
They have. I don't know if any of them are Worker of the Week worthy, except for maybe Lola Vice's cheeks.
Hey, one of them's actually on mine.
Really?
Well, it was a runner-up. Well, let's get into Worker of the Week. I guess I'll go first then. I did consider Natalya, because I thought Natalya did a great job this week of putting over a young talent who has a lot of potential, and is slowly getting there. Not fully developed yet, but she's at NXT, and she's slowly getting better and better and better. And she's got talent, charisma, you know, everything. It is Doug's head cheeks. But she also, you know, she's a hardworking woman. And Lola Vice. And I think Natalya, that you, underground thing, like that's one of the first, because I've seen a few times of WWE doing work or wrestling doing work MMA fights, pretty much, which is like, you know, a fake MMA fight. And this is one of the better versions of it. And I thought that Natalya did a good job of making her look good. And Natalya also got her shit in. And one of the better sharpshooters I've ever seen her hit.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, you know, we've seen the fight pit and how, like, that, you know, it's an updated version of the Lion's Den match. But this underground works pretty good, too.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I thought it was cool. And I thought Lola looked good. I thought, and it set up Shayna and Natalya. So that's cool because, you know, Shayna, like, basically gave that match to Lola Vice. So it was all interference. So Shayna and Natalya are probably drifting into a program now, and Lola got a good win, and Natalya doesn't look bad. Like, I thought it was a thing that everybody looked good in.
I can see...
It's not my worker of the week, Natalya isn't, but she was in heavy consideration. My worker of the week is Gunther, because I saw him have an incredible match on Raw with Xavier Woods.
A 16-minute match that was like Gunther had, like, 13 minutes of the offense.
I thought he looked badass.
Yeah, he did.
He did. He looked great, and Woods was a good dance partner, and he was nice and fast, and he, you know, he gave a different dynamic to him. And Gunther's one of those guys that he works with the smaller guys so well, and it just works. You put, like, him with anybody smaller than him just works. And I thought him and Woods did a great job, but he's my worker of the week. Clinith, who would you pick at all the wrestling this week? And we're going to start it from last SmackDown because we do this show on Fridays. Last SmackDown on, who is the best thing you've seen?
All right, so that's kind of tough because I did kind of miss a lot of wrestling this week. So I miss a lot of wrestling this week. But I will have to say, I wanted to now it was the Awesome Now. Am I thinking, was the Awesome Truth versus DIY on Raw, wasn't it? Or was that following week?
That was last week, I believe, Clint. It wasn't this.
It wasn't this week.
Yeah.
It was the week before. A lot of my fault. Lies would have came definitely last week was Trick Williams. This week, I didn't really watch none of it because it didn't really catch my eye. Could have working. Wait.
I feel you.
Graveyard shit. But if I had to pick a worker of the week, I would pick Trick Williams.
Yeah, I mean, hell of a title victory. Trick Williams is the fucking man.
Yeah. And, like, even just the promo work he did this week with Lash Legend, who, by the way, is his real-life girlfriend.
That's crazy.
Okay. And now it looks like they're going to do a program. And, like, when she was talking and then, like, the fans were just, like, saying... you know, whoop that Trick.
Yeah.
You know, like they usually do. I was waiting for some smart ass, and if I was in the crowd, I probably would have been that smart ass to point at her and say, suck, and then point at him and be like, that dick. Just because of her. Just because, you know, that's what she does in real life.
Jesus H. I liked when Carmelo got drafted and when the fans started chanting, whoop that Trick, and he's like, I did that already.
Yeah.
That's how I knew he was kind of ready for the main roster. It's like, that was a good start. A lot of people get flustered in that moment. It's your big debut and they're cheering somebody else. You know, I just thought he handled that well. But, Trick, hell of a title win. Good for Trick. Trick's the fucking man.
Yeah.
And they did it right by putting the title on him and sending Dragon off to Raw.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, like, it's a small, like, NXT's a small setting. And he's over in a small setting. And we've seen too many times where guys get over in a small setting.
Yeah.
Where guys get over in a small setting, but then head over to Raw or SmackDown, and they're not over anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we saw it many years ago with Adam Rose. He was so over in such a short period of time that they felt like they had something. He goes over to the main roster, and it just doesn't work.
Well, a lot of it's booking, too, though.
Yeah.
I mean, Adam Rose is a gimmick that you can't get much out of anyway.
Yeah.
Now he looks completely fucking different. He's like a Hulk.
Yeah, it's weird how, you know, how different he is. But, like, also, too, I think, you know, in a small setting, a gimmick can get, like, really over.
Yeah.
Like, even Bayley with the, you know, the tube thingies, right?
Well, and it's also, you got... Remember when NWA first came out and that Joe Cephas, who's RIP now, who was doing that karate?
Yeah, what the hell was her name of
that? I don't remember, but the fans were loving it. And that little
question mark.
Yeah, the question. The question mark, is that what? They loved him, and he got completely over of that like group of people in that building that they were shooting at. Coming back, they loved him. Now, if you take him on the road, I don't know if it does as well. But,
right.
Yeah, just an example to make your point.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think, but I do think Dragunov can get old.
100%.
Because he's got that style to where it's just like, if you put him in a ring with Gunther, which they've done before many times, you put him in the ring with Gunther, you put him in the ring with like a McIntyre or a Sheamus. That, you know, that strong, hard-hitting, you know, European style. Both those guys, you know, any of those guys beating the shit out of each other. it'll work.
I think he'll be a big star.
Yeah, or even putting Dragunov in the ring with Finn Balor.
Oh yeah, that sounds like the most.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a fantastic match.
But yeah. Who's your worker of the week, Doug?
My worker of the week, so it's funny, but I'm picking Liv Morgan.
Okay.
Because, you know, she got a big win on Raw.
She beat Nia.
Yep. And it's not just big just because Nia's butt cheeks weigh 300 pounds apiece. But it's big because, you know... Well, one, Nia doesn't like the job.
Yeah.
And two, like, even though a lot of people are saying, oh, Liv should have won the Battle Royal, Liv should have won the Battle Royal, you know, you have to give this time.
Sorry, but I have to disagree with that, yeah. She should have
won. Well, you haven't
been in
the show.
That was a botch at the end of that Battle Royal. She botched it, and that's why Becky won.
That's a hot take.
I take it. Because it seemed like she slipped off, and she was supposed to just land on the apron and lay there, but she just slipped off the ropes, and bam, she fell.
That would be funny if that was true.
I mean... It could have been the case, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, it very well could have. Battle Royal, like, there was a Battle Royal many years ago that Caitlyn, the muscle girl.
Yeah.
She won, and she wasn't supposed to. It was supposed to be Eve Torres. But when Eve got dumped over the top rope, she was supposed to land on the apron, but she misstepped.
Really?
Yeah. So
Caitlyn got lucky?
Yeah, Caitlyn got lucky, so Caitlyn was supposed to get a title shot at Night of Champions, but that was supposed to be Eve's shot. So they did an injury angle where Caitlyn got hurt so Eve could take the title shot.
That's ass.
Because Eve was supposed to win the title.
Yeah.
So, you know, Vince McMahon doesn't like to differentiate from his original plans.
Well, it's him doing it.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah, like that was – so accidental Battle Royal finishes have happened before. I mean, look at a few years ago, Luke Harper and AJ Styles. They had to do a thing where they both landed on the same time when you could clearly see that AJ hit the floor 10 seconds before Luke did. Because AJ's fallen and gets a head start, goes from the top rope. As soon as AJ hits the floor, Harper goes in after him, and they say both guys hit the floor at the same time.
Really?
Yeah.
It's
So it's just, you know, battle.
Shit happens.
Yeah, shit happens. But also too, like when it's unavoidable and it's just like, okay, you have something good that you could be doing here. When you have something good that you could be building to, it's like, just let it go.
But yeah, so Eric, who's your worker of the week?
Christian Cage.
Really?
I thought the segment with us were really presenting him as one of the top heels in that company, as he was when he held it in the title. Christian Cage still, I think he still got it. I think the matches with Swerve is going to be really good. I think he's going to come over really good, and then he's going to live by Swerve as a champion. He's a perfect first guy to face Swerve for his title and on a pay-per-view.
Yeah, it makes sense because Christian is, like, one of the most over heels in the company.
Yep.
So I can see it happening. I mean, just as long as, like, I just hope that God Swerve doesn't have dead relatives because I'm sick of that shit.
Yeah.
Like,
here's a question.
Go ahead, Clint.
No, this is probably off topic at all, but here's a question I want. Because I have been feeling this way for like the last couple of months now about AEW. Is it me, or does it seem like it's starting to become more like the, I'm starting to get the vibes that it's dying out really just as good as Kane is dying out faster than when TNA used to. Because TNA used to be a real hot back in 06, 07 when Rawls and WWE was bad. But it had no TV deal. Now it seems like AEW is starting to fall flat on its face. It's like if you don't have a major title, or not in a title match or title storyline, they don't put over, like, good writing unless it's a championship involved.
That's true.
You know, I don't disagree. I've been saying this as well. But in the past few weeks, I have seen a turnaround. I have seen a change. There's still puzzling decisions being made. Like, having your brand-new world champion, Swerve Strickland, wrestle at 8:10 in the second segment of the show against a job guy. Or not a job guy, he's in a Ring of Honor at TV. But he's a guy that's in a stable. He's another guy. He's not like, and it's sort of like, why didn't they do a big parade for him with confetti and shit? Like, why didn't he come out at the end? You know, like, it's Swerve Strickland. He's your new world champion. So there is still stuff like that. I agree with you. But I do think what Jack Perry, the Bucks, and Okada are doing right now is good shit. I do think their version of the NWO, the elite-esque NWO, I think that could be pretty good.
Yes, NWO. It's, and then Tony Khan kind of like a Vince McMahon taking his first bump. That reminds me of like the whole 97 Stone Cold when he first got the stunner from Steve Austin. Your man got the stunner from Austin.
Yeah, that was kind of a shit.
Stealing ideas from the old. That was just like kind of stealing the Attitude Era's ideas and placing it now in today's wrestling. And you just kind of see it. And they kind of get away with it because of TV 14 compared to that used being PG.
Yeah. My whole thing with AEW is the more shit. If they would have stuck to Dynamite for pay-per-views, maybe a YouTube thing, and that's it, I think they would have been fine. I think they just got way too many people, way too many shows, way too many belts, a shitty video game. Like, they just did way too much when they didn't need to. They had a good core roster. They had Darby. They had MJF. They had some really good guys to market around. They had good veterans like Jericho, and even bringing Bryan in was a good thing. And, of course, Punk is what it is. But I won't settle for the debate that Punk ruined that whole company because, come on, there's usually more things in play. But to me, it's like if you had your tag belts, your world title, and your fucking women's title, and then maybe an undercard title one. Okay. And then you have Dynamite every week. You have every, you have your storylines building on that. Like the way they started, AEW in 2019 was better than WWE. Dustin and Cody is one of the best matches I've ever seen. That's Jimmy and Jey Uso, eat your fucking heart out. You want to see a brother versus brother match? Fuck Jimmy and Jey Uso. Go watch Cody and Dustin. Way better match.
Yep.
Does anybody disagree?
No, not at all.
I don't disagree.
Like Cody and Dustin, you could feel like they wanted to do something because, you know, they did the brother versus, they did a brother versus brother match at WWE, and it was a shit finish.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that was.
Like they needed to do something.
Fast lane sucked.
Yeah.
But AEW had some really good stuff at first, like Omega having that little losing streak and losing Jericho and then losing to Pac, and it's like, does he still have it? They had, like, the Bucks and the Lucha Brothers rivalry. AEW was firing on all fucking cylinders. I was totally bought in. But with these moves and just going so fast and just – Rampage and Collision do not need to exist. There's no need for them.
Right.
It's cool that they're there.
Yeah, there's no need for Rampage.
You don't need three shows for one
brand.
I don't
think you need Collision. I don't think you need Rampage. Rampage was just, there's no need. They could take Rampage and give that to Ring of Honor. That's what they should do.
Yep. I've been saying that for months.
I can agree with that. Yeah.
I agree. Just give Ring of Honor that shit and do your own thing. Because there's, to me, there's no need for it. You, I mean, you have such a big roster now that, yeah, you kind of need to do it, but it shouldn't be that big. They need, like, fit, like I appreciate, and as a fan, I'm glad that a bunch of workers, a bunch of wrestlers have jobs. There's nothing against that. I want everybody to have a job. There's nothing like that. But, like, to have a good core roster, and if you have so many guys, people start getting lost in the shuffle. You start, like, not being able to use guys as well. Top-tier talent. You start, like, why does, like, Pac drift in and out? That guy should be marketed all the time. Why did Christian disappear for 3 weeks before this? To sell the Edge shit? Like, why is he not there? Like, what? Like, they have.
Dealing with anybody whose parents are dead.
They switch people out too much. Like, I like continuity each week. I'm into the story of it. I like to watch, like, okay, where are they going with this? That's why this NWO shit's kind of cool. And Jack Perry's doing the best promos he's ever done.
Right.
Jack Perry's talking really well. So, I have faith for them. I just think they went a little too hard, a little too fast. And I was totally in on it at first. But I do think they can bring it back, and I feel like they're kind of starting to a little bit.
Yeah.
Present Swerve in a good way, though. Let Swerve beat the shit out of Christian. Let Christian say some fucked up shit, and then let Swerve beat the shit out of him.
Oh, I think that's going to happen.
You want to get in the list? By the way, WWE has been awesome. WrestleMania was great. But if we're going to be honest about AEW, that draft sucked. Let's be honest about WWE, too. That draft sucked.
Monday, a couple more shocking moves. But I do agree with that. I do think that the call-ups were good.
The call-ups were fine. But the draft structure, I don't think I'm making any new ground when I'm saying the draft structure needs to be reorganized. If you're going to do the lottery, you cannot put people in a position to where brands are picking their own guys and trying to get people to pop for that. It's fucking stupid to me. I get maintaining your brand and shit, and I'm cool with Bianca Belair being the first pick, but fucking Raw should have snapped. Like, the fact that, like, to me, that's dumb. It doesn't make sense to me. To me, it should be... The draft is like maybe Raw and SmackDown each get 3 picks and 6 people get called up from NXT. And they do it like the NFL draft.
Right.
Do something like that. But to me, this has to be restructured. What are you guys?
Well, yeah. I think the opposite brand should go first on that show. Like, Raw should have gone first on SmackDown and SmackDown should have gone first on Raw. That way, steal pick. That way you can steal a star.
All
right. Well, here's what I think. I think they should bring back the Superstar Shakeup. I think they did that the following year or went back when they had 4 weeks and one person will get each show will get one random pick, one superstar each, to work a way into a storyline leading up to the pay-per-view?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't love that either. I'm not going to lie.
Well,
my favorite...
I think today it would work better than what they're doing now, though. Wouldn't you think?
I agree it's better than this. But that, to me, that's not saying much. This is one of the worst interpretations of it. My favorite, you either do the draft lottery and you put the two guys in the ring and do that shit, because that was kind of fun. And then you whoever wins, you do something like that, or you do the Bischoff-Paul Heyman 2004 draft, where you do the balls in the roulette and you have them pick the balls from the ring and you get a random superstar from the other, and you have Pierce and Nick Aldis pick out of the cages and pick the balls of which superstar. That you got to either do that, something like that. But I do not think you should put the head coaches or the GMs in the position of where they have to pick their own people. To me, you should be only picking from the other side.
Right.
I do not understand. I get maintaining your brand, but those people on your brand, you send them the contracts. Why do you need to pick them again? Just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's funny that Roman Reigns wasn't in the draft.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Well,
and also the Bloodline. The Bloodline's the hottest thing on SmackDown right now, and I love Ricochet. Congratulations to the new Speed Champion, but why the hell is he being drafted before the Bloodline when you're trying to present them as the biggest thing since sliced bread with Solo and Tama Tonga and... This new...
Do you like that they put the tables together, or should they have been drafted separately?
For the Bloodline? Oh, no, the stables need to be together.
No.
Some of the tag teams, like Indy and Candice, didn't make much sense because they're kind of splitting up anyway, it seems like. They're getting close to it.
Indy started doing this things the way Candice wanted.
Oh, Indy's heel now?
Yeah.
All right. I've been kind of tuning out for those segments. I'm not going to lie. No offense. But, I think you should have tables drafted together. I mean, sometimes you should split people up because I like when Raw did it. I like when they split up the Dudleys. I like when the Hardys got split. Like, I did like shit like that in the draft because that's another big moment of like, oh, my God, what's this guy going to do? Think about when Morrison and Miz got drafted from each other, what that did for both of those guys' careers.
Right.
More the latter, but
it was funny too because I remember that episode because it was Miz versus Kofi, and Morrison accidentally got Miz disqualified.
Yeah.
So Kofi gets drafted, or I want to say Kofi ended up getting the pick for Raw, and it was Miz. So Miz is like, all right, we're gonna split up, so I'm just gonna turn on you anyway.
Yeah.
And he did. And it worked.
Of course.
So, but no, like, those draft lottery episodes used to be, like, some of the best episodes of Raw.
The match meant something.
Yeah.
I went in to bring that back.
The only issue I had is that, like, in 2007, they ruined the draft lottery by having Vince blow up at the end.
Yeah.
And I say ruined it because it turned out he didn't die. And then in 2008, when they had to make it about him again, when he was doing that stupid Million Dollar Mania, and they had the fucking stage fall on him after he gave away $500,000. Like... It's just like, all right, this is 2 years in a row. You've ended the draft by making it about this fucker.
Yeah.
Like, fuck off.
The first year was cool, though.
Yeah.
Because that was on my list for him blowing up, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was on your list last week, yeah.
All right. Let's get into our list now that we're talking about it. All right. Our top 10 things that didn't or that should have worked but didn't. I'll go first. What I had, my 10 through 6, I had the 7 character in WCW with Dustin Rhodes. I had Zack Ryder. I had the Nexus. I had Sean O'Hare's Devil Advocate gimmick. I had Lucha Underground, and I had the death of Vince McMahon. Those are all things I think should have worked. Now I'm going to get into my number four. And my number four, not that this guy didn't work, but this guy should have worked on a much higher level, Shelton Benjamin.
I agree.
One of the biggest cases of, and by the way, one of my favorites since a kid, because I grew up in the Ruthless Aggression era. I remember watching, especially talk about the draft, I remember when he got drafted to Raw and he beat Triple H, and he was white fucking hot, man. He was like the hottest babyface to me. I was like, oh my God, he's going to be such a big deal. This guy's a main event. He beat Triple H, for God's sakes. Nobody beats Triple H. It was the reign of terror. And fucking Shelton did it. And then Shelton fucking beat Ric Flair at Backlash. And it's like, Shelton's the man, dude. And the IC Championship run. And I thought, but I always, and WWE will try to say, oh, it was the personality. He couldn't cut a promo. You can do things to work around that. This guy is one of the most athletically talented people I've ever seen. And also, when you give him stuff, it does kind of work. His mother did work being around. I like that.
Yeah,
character stuff.
He
shouldn't have been on a losing streak, but...
Yeah. The issue with that was, obviously, it wasn't his real mother.
Yeah.
And, like, she had an attitude. The actress who played his mother had an attitude.
Yeah. Mama Benjamin. But I liked having... I thought Shelton was a badass that could have done so many... when he did the gold standard shit and he started doing the gold hair, and I always liked Shelton Benjamin, and I always saw a main event title run. MVP of the Money in the Bank match.
Oh, always.
Shelton Benjamin is just, to me, it's one of the biggest cases of, like, it could have been so much more. You just book him a little better. I don't blame him whatsoever. Like, you could, like, personality, you can keep talking shit about that. I thought he had a good personality. Maybe his promos weren't electric, but he got the message across. And he was a damn good worker. Better than fucking a lot of the guys there. Like, it just...
I'll go next.
Why would you even intend to put him and Charlie Haas back together? No offense to Charlie Haas. But fucking, after they... The world's greatest tag team, after they split up... You got to build towards this guy being a main eventer. Just my opinion, though. All right, Eric, you're number four.
My 10 through 5 is Ricky Starks for CM Punk. Feud should have worked. The original idea of Judgment Day, CM Punk versus Authority, and then Wardlow. And then Pinnacle and AEW. And then Aces and Eight. My number four is Stone Cold joining forces with Vince McMahon and teaming with Triple H. I know this is shortened because Triple H got injured, but I thought this could have worked. Obviously, if Triple H didn't get injured, it might have worked. But I thought it was a good swerve when Stone Cold turned heel and joined forces with Vince McMahon. So I thought that was a good storyline, and then they turned it into a comedy, but I thought it could have worked.
Okay,
so the two-man power trip, pretty much, and the heel turn is... I don't disagree. What were you going to say, Doug?
There's many reasons why it didn't work. One is that, like, Austin feuded with McMahon for almost 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now you're going to align with him. But then they wanted to do something because they were going to have Triple H be a babyface and feud with Austin. But Triple H realized two things. One, he was a piece of shit at the time, so he would not work as a babyface. And two, he would have to go over, he would have to put guys over clean. That didn't work for him. Because this was before Reign of Terror Triple H, but this was Triple H, oh, my balls are still way too big for anybody else to beat me, Triple H. As far as the two-man power trip goes, they really didn't have anybody to work with because Rock decided to go make movies. The Undertaker and Kane stuff was okay.
Yeah.
But, and then, like, you had Benoit and Jericho who were, you know, still trying to come on to work. Like, Jericho was almost there being a star. Yeah. Benoit still had a little bit more left to go.
That's what I'm saying. You put the title on one of them.
Yeah. So, like, it's just they really didn't have much to work with. They didn't really have anybody. Because Austin goes from being the biggest babyface in the company to now he's the biggest heel. And now you either have to switch guys or you have to start building guys up bigger.
Yeah, but also, it's not that complicated, bro. You have The Rock. And I know he left. He was there for that Raw after. Don't get lippy with me, old man. And he was there for that Raw after, and that steel cage match was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
They should have kept hold of The Rock. That was their big issue.
Well, then tell him, then when he said,
well,
hey,
didn't
Vince
he
Franco,
use
make
him and he got
to say no.
What did he do to the movie?
I mean, I wouldn't risk the Scorpion King for, I guess the Scorpion King was important enough to beat, you know, saving. But you also got to go back and you're acting like, I guess it didn't work, whatever. Those tag matches were fucking awesome. The Jericho and Benoit match was a great tag match. The Brothers of Destruction match was a great tag match.
The Jericho and Benoit tag match, I'll admit, yes, that was great. The Undertaker Kane stuff.
It was fun.
It was fun, but like you had to make people think that Undertaker and Kane had a chance to win.
Yeah.
But because Austin and Triple H were getting the one-upsmanship all the time, and then every time Undertaker and Kane would get in the ring, Austin and Triple H would piss themselves and leave and then go to the back, complain to Vince, being like, we should be able to beat them up 2-on-1. It's not fair that it's a fair fight. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, so they weren't getting, I guess, and this is always my big issue with heels, is that, like, they refuse to take their comeuppance and, like, they feel like they have to beat somebody up like 10 or 15 times in a row. Because up until Jericho and Benoit beat them,
yeah,
Austin and Triple H never really got their comeuppance, except for the one time when Undertaker threw Austin through that window.
Yeah. I mean, eventually in the Alliance and stuff, Austin got his comeuppance.
Yeah. Eventually he did, yeah.
Long-term storytelling, pal.
But I'm talking about with Big Nose.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked a lot of the tag matches. I agree that it didn't work, but it didn't work for multiple reasons. One is the one that Doug kind of rimmed off the first, is you didn't have a top babyface without Rock. If you're going to have the Rock,
yeah.
Oh, you need somebody else. Jericho was almost there, but, and also Jericho and Austin didn't have the best chemistry.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, true, but here's one thing I did like about the two-man power trip. Not only did they not, the top two single goals and the tag titles at the same time. And then with the four Triple H's injury getting out of the two-man power trip, makes you wonder what was the complete ending of that. Was that a stage fright when Triple H tore his quad? Were going to go over that night as champion still? Or was that just like an automatic swerve? All right. The match got to go, but Jericho and Benoit have to win the match now.
That's a good question. I personally think with the way they were yelling at each other beforehand, I think it was going to be Austin and Triple H at King of the Ring.
So they were going to turn Triple H babyface?
They were going to try to, yeah. Or it would just be heel versus heel, like they did Triple H and Angle at Royal Rumble. And do a heel versus heel.
Yeah. That's ass.
Well, then I guess it's good that Triple H didn't... that is Triple H's Taurus quad then, so we didn't get that match.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah.
All right, what's your pick? So what was your 10 through 6?
All right, my number 10 was PN News. My number 9 was the NWA and the WWF. Number 8 was 205 Live. Number 7 was Heavy Metal Van Hammer. Number 6 was the Mr. Perfect face run. Number 5 was Neville on the main roster. And my number 4, we're going to go back to 1999, and a stable that was basically a bunch of corporation cast-offs called the Union.
Oh, I like the Union.
I did too. And the thing about it, and Mick Foley has even talked about how this was dog shit. Because you have this stable of guys, you know, Mankind was a corporation cast off from the start. Big Show gets kicked out of the corporation because he headbutted Vince McMahon at WrestleMania. Ken Shamrock gets kicked out of the corporation because he didn't like the fact that Shane basically told Vince, this is my corporation now, go fuck yourself. Shamrock thought that Shane was being disrespectful, which he was, but Shane didn't give a shit because he was a smug little bastard back then. And Tess got kicked out of the corporation because, you know, because Triple H threw him to the wolves in a match against Kane and X-Pac. Test loses the match, even though Triple H throws him to the wolves, and then Boss Man starts beating up Test because Test couldn't get the job done. So, you know, that makes a lot of sense. So, and then they're being led by Vince, who is a corporation cast off himself because he didn't know enough to just smack the shit out of his kid and say, listen, motherfucker, I'm older than you. Therefore, you listen to me. You know, Shane is a person back then who deserved to have his head pooped on.
You thought he should have got pooped?
Yes.
Okay.
At least I would have thrown my feces at him back then. But, like, the storyline here is that... The issue with the group was the fact that, like, Test was nowhere near what he eventually would be in a lot of people's eyes. Test still sucked.
Well, when did Test get good?
I don't know. You tell me. You were a fan.
I'm not a fan. I just don't fucking hate him like you do. But I don't think he ever, like, it's not like he hit a peak. If anything, this was some of his better stuff. And the stuff in 2003 was okay. With the testicles with Stacy and the heel run with Scott Steiner, I guess. But he never really, nothing really came out of it.
But, like, this stuff was just, like, you know, Mick Foley didn't like it. I mean, I personally did like it. I do feel like they kind of ended it. They ended it abruptly with Mick's injury and the stupid higher power bullshit.
That shit sucked.
Okay. Because it put an end to a stable, a babyface stable, which they desperately needed.
Yeah.
Because they needed foils for the heels.
Yeah.
So... like the whole, whoever's doing this, get their microphone out of their pants. It sounds like they're sitting on their mic for Christ's sake.
Okay.
right.
All right, you're done. Yeah. My turn. Unless you got more on the Union.
Well, my point is that, like, they just, like, because it was ended too soon, I think that's why it didn't work. Because they wanted to go into something that they felt like worked. Because Vince did not like being a babyface. Mainly because he's not one in real life. But it just, I felt like the Union just got, it ended too abruptly.
Yes.
Ready for
my
pick?
I think they gave it a chance.
Yeah.
Yep.
I love the, I liked all the guys. I love Shamrock. I love Big Show. I love Mankind, and I don't mind Test. So I thought the 2x4 thing was cool. I thought they were badass.
Yeah, they were, and like Vince McMahon having his sleeves rolled up, and he had his 2x4 too, and
yeah,
like they were aligned with Austin and Rock, and
yeah, it was cool. I thought should it have worked more? Yeah, should they have not have been with Vince? Yeah, they should have been going against Vince the whole time.
Austin should have left.
Yeah,
because if you think about it, Union would be something Austin should lead.
Yeah, either Austin or Mankind. One of them.
I think Mankind kind of was a de facto leader, and then when he got hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, Austin should have let him. But and they should have been going against Vince actively.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I agree with you. All right. My number three, from the annals of WCW, I have another thing that I think.
The annals.
We have the Millionaires Club versus the New Blood.
I still think that out of all the bad pay-per-views in 2000, Slamboree 2000, even though it, you know, with the triple cage and all that, still is probably the best of the worst.
Yeah. The storytelling wasn't great, but the young guys versus the old heels, I did think had legs. And I think
the old heels were the baby faces.
Yeah. I think it should have been the old, I think it should have been the old heels.
Right.
Because it really didn't do, like, a lot of, like, I already talked about Sean O'Hare on this list. Sean O'Hare, Mark Jindrak, a lot of those guys had a lot of potential and could have really became something. And I think the way they were booked did not do them any favors in either company. And it sucks.
Yeah. And, like, you got to think of, like, some of, like, the guys in the Millionaires Club. Hogan, Sting, Luger, Flair, Sid for, like, a day. Dallas Page, Kurt Hennig. And then, you know, they would add other guys later on.
Yeah.
But, like, that was, like, your main core of guys, right?
Yeah.
And Kang into a point. Luger and Flair just came off being heels. Dallas Page had been a heel for a year and a half. Hogan's a dick. Kurt Hennig just came off kind of a heel run.
Yeah.
Sting was the only true babyface.
They should have been heels.
Yeah.
Like, you take that whole group, you make them heels, you put Sting over with the, even though Sting's technically not New Blood, because I do think Sting's heel run in 99 was a fucking failure.
Yeah.
And it was, like, here's how much of a failure that was. When he attacked the babyface filthy animals, all right, so you have this cage match, Chris Benoit versus Dean Malenko. Malenko wins. The rest of Revolution comes out. They attack Benoit. The filthy animals come in to try to help Benoit. David Flair, who's a heel at the time, starts smacking the filthy animals with a crowbar. Okay? But he also unhooks Chris Benoit from the top rope where he was handcuffed. He saved him. He goes, you know, get out of here, Chris. And, you know, you're good. They shake hands. He leaves the ring. And because David Flair also at the time, he was heel because he was also doing the thing where he was going nuts.
Yeah.
He leaves the ring. Sting had been jumped by the filthy animals like 20 minutes before. Conan gets out of there.
Sting jumps him from behind, and instead of them booing Sting because Sting hit Conan with a cheap shot, they're cheering Sting. So Sting and David Flair, who were two heels, and I'm not going to say top heels as far as David Flair goes, but they were doing heel work on that very fucking show, in that very fucking segment, by attacking babyfaces, because they both came out to make sure Chris Benoit was okay, the fans were cheering him. It makes no fucking sense. So I think that's one of the reasons why they weren't even going to try. If Sting was involved with the Millionaires Club was going to be cheered.
Yeah.
Because they had, it had been proven Sting cannot be booed.
Yeah.
So I think that was the issue. Is if you're going to have Sting part of the Millionaires Club, he's not going to get booed. And then, like, even Kevin Nash is part of the Millionaires. But, like, you could boo Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
All right? Kevin Nash gets booed at family reunions. Mainly because he's probably fucked most of his relatives out of money.
Oh.
You thought I was
going to What?
You really had to go there, man.
All right.
Booed at family reunions.
Eric.
Poor Kevin.
Your turn.
I think you might agree with this one because you're a big fan of him, as I am. The American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, should have worked in AEW. He should have been the top star in AEW. He should have been probably the first champion, maybe the second champion, but that's partly because he didn't want to be champion either. But he should have been champion.
All right. Can I say something?
Maybe he didn't leave, but I don't know. He probably still leaves. He still wanted to go back to WWE. I think he should have worked in WWE more than he was.
I believe Clint has had a point. Before his phone cuts out again, I think we should let him go.
All right. So here's my point to the whole Cody Rhodes and being AEW champ. I don't think he should, maybe he should have been champ, but the overall championship, I think was a great idea putting on Jericho first. And here's why. Jericho was fresh off of from the WWE. It's a brand new company. What better way than having a former top star of another company walk into another one and becomes the inaugural champion? It gets eyes on the company. I'm not saying Cam, man, but Cam. A lot of people don't like watch New Japan. Don't know more. I didn't know much more King of Man until AEW. I never seen really none of his matches unless I YouTube it or anything like that.
Yeah.
And no, Will Ospreay as well. These are guys from, like, New Japan that we don't, in America, don't watch because they don't really televise it unless you pay for it on pay-per-view. Or they're coming to you, or New Stardom or somewhere in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Yeah,
exactly.
So you need, like, a fresh start. Now, to me, I would say him forfeiting, giving himself that one-and-done type deal against Jericho, I think that was pretty stupid.
So stupid. He should have been the one to take the belt off Jericho. That's my only – no offense to Moxley, and I think Moxley did a good job as the champion through the pandemic era. But there's money on the table there with Cody. Cody was the top – that's the thing with Eric. Eric, it's a great pick. But it's also like he was the top star, in my opinion. I was watching that show for Cody. Cody's what brought me in, and that's why I'm so into him now, too. Cody, he made me a fan through that. He was kind of the face of the company, it felt like. And even if he wasn't in the top program, he was the program that mattered. He made Sean Spears fucking a big name for fucking 5 minutes. Like he had the ability to go against anybody, and you were rooting for Cody, and you really wanted to see Cody. To me, he was the top babyface. AEW fans started booing him because AEW fans are pussies. But And they're Mark fans, so of course they want to see everybody go heel at some point. I think, Cody, you need to save it as long as you can because he's the top baby face in the world. And then eventually when you do it, it means so fucking much. But I'm glad he never did that there. I do agree with you. I do think he should have been champion at some point. He should have, and I'm sure that role was his idea, and that was to show that he wasn't selfish and very admirable as an EVP, but it's also like, dude, you got to fucking, you need to be selfish.
Yeah, even if it was
If being selfish helps the company, be selfish.
So, it was, what show was it? It was their second show in that he, that he went 20 minutes with Darby Allin, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So he does 20 minutes with Darby Allin on a show. Nobody goes over in that 20-minute draw. Darby Allin, virtual unknown. Nobody really knows anything about him. And Cody refuses to put him over. And also takes a wicked chair shot from Sean Spears. That goes to show you how unselfish Cody Rhodes is. Mm-hmm. The next show over, Cody is getting pinned by the Scum Fox because they're not unselfish. They are very selfish. And Kenny Omega's Kenny Omega did well by putting Jericho over, and then when he put Pac over.
Yeah, Omega at least waited for his title run.
Yeah.
He waited a little bit.
Scum Fox, like, they're the epitome of selfish. Cody is just like, Cody does what's best for business. I mean, hell, even leading up to WrestleMania, he put Drew McIntyre over.
Yeah,
Cody's definitely not. And really, we were talking about AEW's downfall. I have this hot take that he was basically doing all the booking, and then he stopped when he left, and that's why it turned to shit. That's the easiest explanation for me.
I think what it is because, like, you have these guys that you've, like, there's always, like, with most corporations, there's always a management team.
Yeah.
And there's always, like, the guys that, like, you should go to, but they're unapproachable.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's always, like, that one, like, manager, but he's kind of, like, you know, a rung or two down on the ladder. But he is the most approachable, so he's the one everybody goes to. So he's the one that, basically tries to help everybody and tries to solve everything. And I feel like that was Cody.
Yeah.
Because the Scum Fox, I'm not going to call them by their real name. They're always going to be the Scum Fox. The Scum Fox, their solution to a problem is if you go up to them and say, hey, guys, I don't like the way I'm being booked on TV. Okay, well, you and a partner are going to work with us tomorrow night. We're going to beat you in about 10 minutes. That's how they'll solve a problem is you're going to put them over because they're selfish. Even Kenny Omega. I mean, Kenny Omega did do well, you know. There were times where, yeah, he would put guys over. Like, when he worked that program against Takeshita, all right, and he kept putting Takeshita over.
Yeah, and he built that whole thing. His whole title run was to build up for Hangman to beat him.
Exactly.
And that all worked.
Yeah. You got to give him credit. Tony Khan, here's the thing with Tony Khan. Tony Khan just basically wanted to be the one to put the money in. He doesn't want to solve the problems because he's not a confrontational guy.
Yeah.
So, like, when you go up to Tony and be like, Tony, I have a problem. Tony is one of those guys, and I've known a few few bosses like that, over my many years, because I'm older than dirt. I've known a few bosses who will, when they are basically approached by somebody, said, "Hey, I have a problem with this person." Tony Khan is that kind of boss to where he'll leave the building and force somebody else to take care of the problem. And he will not come back to the building until he knows that that issue has been dealt with.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that, but I don't think Tony's the whole problem. I think we've addressed it. But, all right, who's next? You?
Oh, not Goldberg.
You're Goldberg?
You said who's next?
Is it number three?
Yes.
I get it. You said who's next on Goldberg. Like Goldberg.
So you pop Kenneth. Good job.
You know, at least I can do something. All right. My number three is Mr. Kennedy.
I agree with that pick.
That's a good one.
Because this guy is... he was given the ball so many times. Now, unfortunately, a lot of times injuries stopped it. Like the whole money. First of all, the Money in the Bank win, they were going to have him cash in on Undertaker. They were going to have him cash in on Undertaker because Undertaker had the bicep injury or the elbow injury or whatever the fuck it was. So they basically said, "All right, in about a week, Kennedy, you're gonna cash it. You're gonna win the title." Okay, cool. Well, he had an injury scare at a live event. He was examined by a doctor. Doctor said he tore your tricep. And so they're like, "Oh fuck!" So they took the briefcase on him, gave it to Edge.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Kennedy goes in for a consultation with another surgeon to discuss surgery, and the surgeon kind of feels around. He goes, "That's not torn." He goes, "What are you talking about? Doctor told me it was torn." He goes, "Well, that doctor's an idiot." So they took X-rays and so you have like a sprain or a strain or something. He goes, "You're going to be out of action, but you're only going to be out for like 3 weeks."
That sucks.
And he's looking. He's like, "What the fuck? I just gave back my briefcase. They were going to give me a big push." And the doctor said, "Well, you should have come to me first." So then he told the office, he's like, "Oh, yeah, by the way, my tricep isn't torn." And they're just like, "Oh, well, that's too bad." Yeah, because they jumped the gun with it. Instead of sending him to get the second opinion right away, which is technically what you should do.
Take the case to Edge first.
Yeah, and then you have him go discuss surgery. So instead of, you send him to that other doctor first. Instead of a doctor whose mind was probably more focused on the fact that he wanted to bang one of his nurses,
yeah.
Instead of actually doing his job right. See? But it's just one of those things to where, it was just bad luck. And then there was a thing later on. He was going to be named Vince's son.
Yeah.
All right. But then that list came out of people that were getting steroids from somebody or whatever. His name was on that list, along with several people, including William Regal, Chavo Guerrero, your boy Morrison.
He didn't do it.
Umaga and a couple others. And so, they stopped the push there. And then, when he made his return
and made his big return in that 10-man tag where it was the Lakers versus the Nuggets or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, he pissed Randy off.
He pissed Randy off because he dropped Randy wrong on his shoulder. So Randy dropped him wrong with an RKO, ended up spraining his wrist, and then Kennedy gets fired like 3 days later. Because Cena went to Orton and said, you know, he drops you on the shoulder, he's not safe. So then Cena and Orton went to Vince and said, you got to get rid of him. And Vince did. So he was a failed experiment that could have worked.
Yeah.
And that was working because he was getting over with the crowd. When they started turning him babyface,
they loved that. Kennedy!
Yeah. In 2008, when they were starting to respond to him and he was going babyface and he did the thing where he got Regal fired as general manager.
Yeah.
And then but then he gets drafted to SmackDown and he's going to work Shelton Benjamin. He's going to work this big U.S. title program with him. But then when he does Shelton did the pay dirt move, right? The pay dirt move, and Shelton was still learning how to do that move. And Kennedy ended up, Kennedy landed wrong on his shoulder, and then Shelton landed on Kennedy's shoulder.
Really?
Yeah. So that was like, he was getting momentum so many times, but it's just freak injuries by dipshits.
Yeah.
And I've got nothing against Shelton Benjamin, but Shelton, like, if you watch, like, the early versions of the pay dirt,
yeah,
of Shelton doing that finisher, it sucked.
He got really good with it.
He did get really good with it, but it took about 5-6 months. There was one he did. He wrestled Matt Hardy, I think, on a SmackDown, and that pay dirt just looked like dog shit. But, again, it was the start of the move.
He should have had a different finisher anyway.
Yeah. So... but yeah, no, Kennedy, I mean, he had a better run in TNA.
The asshole.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But in WWE, it could have worked had people just, like, he shouldn't have gotten hurt, but he also should have, like, well, first of all, hopefully that doctor that examined him
was fired.
Well, first of all, I would hate that. Thank God that doctor is not a fucking mortician. Because I could just see, you know, a fucking, or like he's the guy that like, thank God he's not an emergency room doctor that says, oh yeah, this person didn't make it. And then you send a fucking guy who's still alive down to the fucking embalming room and they're getting ready to embalm him. He's like, I'm still alive. I'm still alive. Well, Dr. Clark said you were dead.
All right.
Fucking doctors.
My turn. All right. My number two. There you are. My number two. Kane taking the mask off in the heel run that came after that. I loved some of it. I hated a lot of it. We talked about the Death to Us Apart and the Lita and the Snitsky and no.
Yeah.
No. I loved the mask. I loved the program with RVD, as small as it was. I loved the program with Shane. After that, it turned into ass cheeks. Big cheekus.
Yeah.
I even liked the stuff with The Undertaker. But after that, it turned into cheekus. And it should have been a main event. He should have been world champion at some point before 2011. He should have won the belt in 05. I know you had Batista and shit, but Kane was a really good character for a while there.
Oh, absolutely.
When he got the mask off. And he should have won a championship.
I can agree with that.
Well, and the thing is, too, is that one of the guys they were going to have work with him when he took the mask off was going to be Kevin Nash. And Nash didn't want to do it, but they're like, Kevin, we really need you to. He goes, oh, okay. And then he put his notice in. He's well, like, okay, you really want me to do this? Well, I'm going to quit.
Shows you the faith Kevin Nash had in the storyline. Fucking prick.
Man.
Kevin Nash is fucking hilarious. But, like, he... And his hilarity masks how big of a piece of shit he can actually be. I mean, I would love to go and hang out with him and have, like, a beer. The problem is that he would probably stick you with the bill.
Well, it's just one beer.
Huh?
It's just one beer. It's not like he drunk 10 or 12 of them. It's different.
Yeah, that's the thing. He'd probably have a bunch. And then fucking, he'd be like, all right, I got to go to the bathroom. I got to pee all this beer out. And then all of a sudden you see him just sneak out the back door.
Thanks, adios, Doug.
Yeah. So.
So that's my pick.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good one.
Thank you. Eric, what's your number
two? I like it.
Thank you.
TNA versus WWE. It's a 2010. Monday Night Wars. They tried it for a while. It didn't work. But they brought Hogan, they brought Bischoff, they brought Ric Flair, they brought all the former WCW guys. I think it could have worked, but of course, because of it didn't work because it just didn't. No?
Quinn is either disagreeing with you or he's telling you to shut up.
No. No. No.
Go ahead, Quinn.
That whole Monday Night War, to this day, I still believe Hogan, Bischoff, Flair, everybody who came from WWE was all paid off by Vince McMahon to go there to ruin that. They had a good thing there. TNA was on fire Thursday nights. Then Hogan goes and says, we want to go against the Raw. Not only are you going against Raw, but you're showing the exact same replay on Thursday night as a replay of what happened on Monday night. That's why nobody wasn't watching it on Monday night, because everybody knew it was going to come back on Thursday night again on Mike, whatever
night.
It was on the same week.
Yeah.
So what's the point? It'll be different if you didn't say, all right, remove the Monday nights. But not only are you live on Monday nights against Raw, but you show the show again, the same show again, 4 days later. It's not like you had a secondary show on SmackDown. It was stupid. So you deserve, they was all paid off to do that.
All right, so let me just say this, because I know we are getting close to SmackDown's going to be on in a little bit, and we don't want to miss AOP versus a New Catch Republic, you know, main event anywhere in the country, but like all the guys that went over from TNA, because it wasn't just Hogan and Flair and Bischoff. And, you know, it was also
boy.
Jeff Hardy, Rob Van Dam, Scott Hall, X-Pac, you know, Sean Waltman, Val Venus went over, fucking the Nasty Boys went over, Shannon Moore went over, you know, big names.
Even Shannon?
Yeah.
I love Shannon Moore.
I do too, and I love the Nasty Boys, but the Nasty Boys, every time, back in 2010, every time the Nasty Boys stepped on the scale, it was usually, even if it wasn't a talking scale, the scale would go, get off! Because they weighed 400 pounds apiece. They couldn't fucking move. You roll them down a hill, you're going to take down a small village. The people that were being brought in, they were bringing in too many people, and they were bringing in people that couldn't draw money, even if they were locked in a room with green crayons.
Yeah.
So
it was never gonna. I mean, it comes down to it didn't have the budget.
Yeah.
Didn't have the production value. It's on Spike TV. There's a few different things that TNA had going against it. One thing, though, it should have never been competing with Vince in the first place.
No.
You were the first true alternative. You didn't need Hogan. You didn't need Bischoff. You didn't need these assholes. You had Samoa Joe. You had Christopher Daniels. You had the phenomenal one, AJ Styles. You had Beer Money. You had the Motor City Machine Guns. You had so much. I agree with Clint. They did ruin it. I don't know if it was paid off by Vinnie Mac, but I do think that bringing in all these guys and the storytelling definitely got worse, and the matches definitely got worse. And TNA, I'm glad it's still around, but it's a shell of what it used to be. And it's one of my top 10 rosters in all of history, maybe top 5, because TNA in 2008 had such a great roster.
Yeah.
By the time you get to fucking 2000, whenever the fuck those guys came, it started to ass up a bit.
And yeah, and that's the thing, is that, like, they had a really good roster. They had a lot of momentum. But you had Hogan coming in because WWE wasn't going to take him back. He had failed with American Gladiators. It's just, it sucked. So.
Yeah, I liked some of the stuff they were doing, like building around Jeff Hardy and stuff, but Immortal should have never been a thing.
Oh, God.
Another shitty
issue.
So, all right. Your turn, Doug. Number D.
My number 10 is Battle Bowl and the Lethal Lottery. And this is actually, like, it sucks that I'm putting it on this list because it is one of my all-time favorite match concepts.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it didn't work.
I mean, I think it worked to an extent. It didn't stick, though, for a long time.
Yeah.
WCW ended up going with World War III as an attraction over that, which I think was a bad move.
Yeah. It was like the thing is, when they did it as Starrcade, it was kind of, it was a mistake doing it 2 years in a row, but then they tried to give it its own pay-per-view.
I thought it worked.
And it should have. But then, like, they didn't do it again. And then they tried to bring it back in 96. Because I like the idea of winning the Battle Bowl, and then you get the ring, and you have to defend the ring, like Dallas Page did. And then you defend it for a year. Because Tony Schiavone even said, he goes, you get this ring, you defend it for a year, and then next year in Battle Bowl, you have to fight for it again. It's like what they do with the stupid Dynamite Diamond ring. Okay? Except for that's a battle royal where it's just the last two guys in the ring. Like, Lethal Lottery, and I think Lethal Lottery didn't work because of the fact that, like, the matches were short because you usually had guys teaming together that did not like each other. But still, like, I would like to see somebody try it again, because I do think that with just a couple tweaks, you can make it work.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't disagree.
I don't disagree either, bub. Ooh. Ready for my number one drum roll? The most botched, and we've talked about it, but the most botched pay-per-view in the history of wrestling, Starrcade 97. It's been talked about so many times. I know the finish. I know with Nick Patrick and Bischoff and Hogan and who to blame and who not to blame. All I'm saying is it's the most bought pay-per-view WCW ever had. The biggest, not the biggest house, because I think the Goldberg Thunderdome, they did more than, because they only had 18 for this.
Yeah.
But they were such a big company at the time, and there was such a big pay-per-view, and your fans were so excited for this moment. And not only did it not deliver on the moment of Sting and the big, happy, everything that WrestleMania 40 was, that's what Starrcade 97 should have been.
Right.
This was the culmination of the long-term storyline, like the bloodline and finishing the story. This was Sting finishing the story and beating the NWO. And it wasn't good. The match kind of drug, and then he had the finish where Sting looked stupid with the count that wasn't really a fast count. And that blows. And also, if you look on this pay-per-view, it's not a great pay-per-view in its own right.
You had probably one or two good matches on here. Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko was pretty good.
But they've had better.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it was a stupid-ass... It was a bad finish because it was drop kicks. It was a drop kick to the knees that ended the match. A drop kick, which, by the way, Eddie almost missed. And then you had DDP and Kurt Hennig, which was a decent match. Other than that, yeah, everything else was just kind of mediocre. But also, too, you got to remember that there was a lot, that there was a few guys that were supposed to wrestle on that pay-per-view that didn't.
Yeah.
You know? And Malenko was supposed to be one of them. Malenko was given time off because his son was going to be born Christmas Day.
Right.
And they had it all set up. They were going to replace him with, I think they were going to replace him with Ray again. And then, but then they're like, you know, Nash has already canceled on us. Conan's already canceled on us. Raven can't go. You got to fucking be here.
Yeah.
Like, we're begging you. And fucking, like, Conan had a legit reason. His girlfriend gave birth to a stillborn. So you got to be with her because she was not in good, she was not in a good headspace.
Who?
Conan's girlfriend. So she was not in a good headspace, so he needed to be with her. Big doofus, the giant jackass, fucking, he didn't... You know, he didn't want to do a job for the Giants, so he fucking decided, you know, I'm just going to no-show. We had two cats here taking swings at each other.
WWE match, bro. Holy shit! I killed
it. But, like, yeah, that whole pay-per-view was just like... The whole pay-per-view, I think, was just snake bit by the fact that, like, there were already people trying to fuck it up. Mr. Hogan being one of them.
Mr. Hogan?
Yeah.
Mr. Hoagie?
Yeah. Hulk Hoagie. Which almost became a thing, by the way.
They did a deal with Subway?
They were going to. They were going to do Hulk's Hoagies.
All right.
I'm serious. Bischoff even told the story.
I believe you.
All right. You just don't want me to say anymore
because
you're
going to
get hungry.
Yeah, and SmackDown's almost
on. This is probably about 15 minutes story.
All right. Eric, who's your number one?
This has been talked about a lot, too. And we've talked about this probably numerous times on the show. But the Invasion 2001 WWE versus WCW, that should have worked. That had potential to be a great storyline, but I think the wrong guys were involved. But not the wrong guys, but just not the top guys were involved in WCW, like Hogan and Sting and...
Well, yeah, and because... Flair. They should have waited till 2002. They should have waited till all the contract, because that was a storyline that was victim to the guaranteed contract. And all these guys had guaranteed contracts that they could sit at home and get paid, but there was no compete. So they couldn't go to the WWE. They couldn't go, or else they'd violate their contract and they wouldn't get the free money. God bless DDP and Booker T, because those are the two guys that went against that. All the other preliminary talent, I don't know if they had. Like, I don't know if Mike Awesome and that had a guaranteed contract. That's fucking crazy. But but good for Booker T and DDP for, like, you know,
going through with that and giving up that money. But, like, you weren't going to get Lex. You weren't going to get Hulk. You weren't going to get Hulk for – you're never going to get Lex again. You're not going to get Hulk for a year. You're not going to get Rick for a year. You're not going to get all these guys, Hall and Nash. Like, it should – they just should have waited.
That was the only –
that's
yeah.
the only issue with the storyline. Is that they should have waited and got the bigger names, but instead they came in with what looked like lesser, inferior talent. And also, Vince booked them like shit. WWE,
yeah.
when they tell that part of the story about it failing, they only tell the part that's not their fault. But the part that is their fault is Vince could have booked them better.
Right.
I've seen those tag matches. Sean O'Hare, I keep talking about Sean O'Hare, but Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo could have looked a lot stronger. Fucking Canyon and DDP
yep.
could have looked a lot stronger. Like that, like there's certain guys in the invasion that should have got treated a lot better. RVD
oh, yeah.
is a
and we always talk about long term booking. That should have been key. That should have been like a year tease.
Yeah.
And how badass did Chronic look?
Chronic was good. But here's
they looked really good. The issue was is putting them with guys. They've always had issues working with guys that are the same size.
Yeah.
It's just that match against Undertaker and Kane just didn't work.
Yeah.
All right.
Doug, what's your number one?
I think Clint had something to say.
Okay, go ahead, Clint.
So I want to know, you said even though DDP... What's your thoughts on the whole DDP being revealed as the Undertaker's stalker, wife Sarah? To me, I think that was the dumbest thing out there. Out of all people, have DDP come out and look that weak.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it as a kid, and I thought DDP tried his best at playing the character and being a very villainous scumbag. But you had him get beat. He got the shit beat out of him by that Sarah.
Right.
She beat the fuck out of him. So it's like, and the steel cage match. Oh, my God, that cage match at SummerSlam, which I loved that match as a kid, but also you watch that, and Canyon and DDP get absolutely bitched out. They get made to look like the biggest pussies of all time. And they're way too good for that. So, yeah, DDP should have just came out and started Diamond Cut Motherfuckers.
Right.
And they should have built, if they were going to have Rock, because Rock was there. Rock came back around that time. You could have done Rock and DDP, People's Champ versus People's Champ.
Right.
That seemed like the easiest money on the table for DDP.
No, I agree.
Oh, yeah.
All right. All right, Doug, you're number one.
All right. Eric, don't interrupt me again or you're fired. The one Billy Gunn.
Sorry.
I thought the one Billy Gunn was a great character. The infamous episode when I said he should have won Royal Rumble 2001 and Clinton almost body slammed me. But,
yeah, that was one of Clinton's like four appearances that he has on his contract.
The Brock Lesnar of the Wrestling Through the Years podcast. But,
yes, I am. I always come back.
He always comes
I'm
back.
I'm not in it for the money because I don't get paid for money. So remember that.
You don't get paid for this. That's funny. But yeah, the one Billy Gunn.
Truth to it too.
Should the one Billy Gunn, should have it worked more? Yes. But also, all you could do with him at the time was put him in a feud with Latino Heat and fucking and China because you had too much going on. The 2001 was too stacked.
Yeah.
That there's no offense to Billy, but that could have been nothing more than a mid-card because you had Rock, you had Stone Cold in the height, in the prime. That's when those two were colliding towards each other. You also had a really good Kurt Angle. You had a really good Chris Benoit that was coming into his own. You had an amazing Chris Jericho. You had the best heel of all time, Triple H. Yeah, there was too much in that main event scene to fit in the one Billy Gunn. But I do like him a lot.
I did too. I felt like that he was above just doing matches on Heat.
Yeah.
I mean, I do get your point though, but I do feel like there could have been more.
Well, and I like the stuff with him and Eddie, but
yeah.
I like putting him with China. I don't know why they got away from that.
Yeah, and the whole thing where he just stopped feuding with Right to Censor, I mean, I know they kind of built, they kind of beat it to death.
Yeah.
But there could have been more that could have been added to that.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
All right. Let's get the hell out of here.
I was, yeah.
Time for SmackDown. You want to tell the people what we're doing next week, Doug?
Yeah. So we're going to do something instead of doing, because I was thinking about doing a War Drums next week, but next Friday night is actually an anniversary.
Ooh.
25th anniversary of the highest rated overall episode of Monday Night Raw.
What year?
1999, May 10th. There was no Nitro that night.
Really?
Yeah, Nitro was preempted for basketball. There was no Nitro, so that's why 9 million people tuned in for that single episode of Raw.
Damn.
Six-man
9
tag
million?
Team. Huh?
9 million? Wow.
9 million, yep. The overall rating was like a 9.3 or something like that was the Nielsen rating or whatever. So I don't know how I don't know how many million people that actually translates into. Cause like, but the rating, it was a 9.2 rating. So I think it was almost like 18 million people were watching. But
impressive.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I'm excited.
Yeah. So main event is Triple H, Undertaker, and Shane versus Rock, Austin, and Vince.
Holy shitsky.
And by the way, that's also Sable's last appearance with the company.
Sounds good. I'm very excited to watch this episode.
Oh, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, me too.
All right, let's get the hell out
see
of here.
See everybody next week. We love you, Clinton.
Love you, too. I'll let you know when this one is.
We'll see everybody next week, and I'm going to have to resuscitate.
Yeah, guys.
Later.
Bye.
Later.